would like to speak 15, 20 minutes or so with regard to the meditations, and initially in the sitting posture. And then at the end of the sitting, I'll speak to you about the walking, standing, reclining posture. There are a number of features and aspects of the sitting posture which are worth giving care and attention to. And also I'd like to make some reference to the kind of emphasis that is placed here. In the mindfulness of breathing, it is regarded in the tradition as a core or practice. What I mean by that is a practice which makes a contribution to our well-being in many different ways. It's a contribution towards calm and insight, towards clarity of mind and understanding. With the mindfulness of breathing meditation, we give care and attention to all the breath as it comes and as it goes, as much as possible. And as the Buddha said himself in one of his best-known talks, one is aware when the breath is long, one is aware when the breath is short. One is aware when the breath is coming, one is aware when the breath is going. So following those instructions, we give care and attention to the inhalation and the exhalation, and being aware of the influence, the impact that the breath has as we breathe in on the body and as we breathe out. Each time we breathe in, it has an influence on cellular life, on the cells. So we are conscious that in the moment of the breath coming in, we feel the change that's taking place in the body. That may be in the nostrils, of course, in the throat, in the lungs, and we feel some influence, some expansion with the in-breath. And then we breathe out, we feel some settling down on the outgoing breath. We're aware when the breath is long, we're aware when it's short. We're aware when it's shallow, we are aware when it's deep. We are aware when it's rough, we are aware when it's smooth. We are aware when it's gross, we are aware when it's subtle. So we're staying in touch at the moment-to-moment level with the breathing experience, and that will contribute to steadiness, to calmness, to relaxation, and also, of course, making us aware at many levels of change. Each time you and I notice the breath coming and the breath going, it's a moment or moments of seeing change. Each time we are aware of the breath coming and going, we're also aware, of course, of organic life. Organic life, the body drawing in air from the environment and then releasing it back into the environment. So it reminds us and makes clear to us of our connection, our interconnection with the elements which are around us. And an important and essential feature of mindfulness of breathing is, as I say, to contribute to clarity, to calmness of being, and also to seeing clearly, which is the very characteristic of insight meditation, of Vipassana teaching. And so our insight and calmness and clarity begin here from day one in the sitting, in the walking, etc. In the mindfulness of breathing, it is helpful and useful to give care and attention to the exhalation, a little extra care and attention. Many people report that they may start off with some connection with the in-breath, and then on the out-breath, the mind wanders and drifts away, and may not get back until the bell is rung at the end of the sitting. So with the mindfulness of breathing, interested in the in-breath, a little extra interest in the outgoing breath. And sometimes for some people, there are some moments before the next in-breath comes in. Also a time when we can wander, daydream, fantasize, space out, and get out of touch with the immediacy of existence. So can we just be quite steady and present, and sometimes therefore there may be some moments before the body needs to draw in the air for the next in-breath. In those moments of the out-breath and the next in-breath, sometimes people begin to panic and think they're not going to take another in-breath. Well, if I may say, in 24 years of teaching, everybody has succeeded. That the next in-breath has come in. We have not yet carried anybody out of the meditation hall because it didn't come in. So you can have some confidence in the years. So sometimes there's the out-breath, moments before the next in-breath comes in, don't panic, don't worry, don't have fear or whatever, just be present and the body will draw the air in. If one feels a little tight or contracted, of course, then to make the breath a little bit longer and the intention a little bit deeper if that feels more comfortable for you. There are, of course, a range and variety of techniques in association or in connection with the breath. So, for example, Zen brothers and sisters will use the rise and fall of the abdomen, and that would be a primary object in their meditation. Ubakin tradition will concentrate on the tip of the nose, and that's the methodology which is used there. What we ask while you are here, please, to use and embrace and stay steady with those basic instructions. When we are breathing in, we are aware. When we are breathing out, we are aware. If the breath is long or if it is short, we are in touch with the breath. Sometimes others have engaged, say, in TM meditations or in Tibetan tradition visualization meditations. And then the thought arises when it's a little bit difficult to stay with the breath and the fullness of the breathing. Oh, I'll go back to what I did before because it's easier. We're not here to make things easier. We're here to see what's going on with us here and now. And sometimes in many things in life, we mind runs to the past to want to make things easier. Unfortunately, it's often not the case. Life gets easier through the wisdom with the present. And so our encouragement is and our request is to stay steady with mindfulness of breathing for calmness and for insight and understanding from one day to the next. And if sometime in the future you go and sit one of those ruthlessly intensive Zen retreats and sesshins where you might start at 3:30 in the morning, so starting here at 5 o'clock is pretty well like a holiday camp, then just follow those instructions. If you go to another teacher and other traditions, follow those. Don't cling nor hold to things which instructions which are given here, so that we are actually free to explore things afresh, free to see over a number of days our own experience with things which are new. Some of you, of course, sat retreats with myself, Catherine, Stephen previously, and will be familiar with that core instruction of mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out, and staying as steady and connected with it as much as possible. In the sitting posture, in the period of time, there are often two or three areas which people report, and you may well mention and bring that up with us today in the small group meetings with you. And one is the old favorite of pain in the body, and The other would be restlessness and tiredness. With the pain in the body that arises, sometimes it's just physical. Physical means that it's difficult with the sitting posture, whether on the chair, whether kneeling, or whether in the cross-legged position. And it isn't easy to sit for a sustained period of time and to be rather still with an upright posture. And if I may say for here, for all of you Israelis here, it's a bit more painful, I think, because you still haven't had what I'm sitting on, most of you know, from the Zen tradition called a zafu. And they are extremely helpful for the sitting posture. So 18 months ago, I have to get this word in now, 18 months ago, it sounds too conceited to say out of great compassion, but in Bodh Gaya, where some of you know, I went to famous tailors who truly runs a little shop in Bodh Gaya, and I said, Jamal, he's the Muslim tailor, I said, Jamal, I've got all these friends in Israel. There's not a zafu in the whole country. And therefore, would you kindly make some zafu covers? I can't remember how many we made. Probably 80, I would have, maybe even 100. Certainly about 80 covers. And then Yael, that's Danny's partner, very kindly, the whole box of these, we didn't empty that, just the covers, brought them to Israel. They are still waiting for something to go in them. Now, if we have to wait any longer, they'll become an historical relic. So my thought was, if the good organizers of the Insight Meditation group here won't be back next year, then I've got one condition. I've got to have an email saying, Christopher, yes, they are all stuffed and they will be in the meditation hall for you all. That's the agreement if you want to get me back. All right. So, in other words, sitting in here, and many of you are sitting on your mother's pillows, which I'm sure she's thrilled about, and the cushions off your partner's sofa, and people forget that these are two completely different species. One thinks it's the same as a zafu. It isn't. So all credit to each and every person here who is using cushions and pillows and not these, which are firm and strong and do hold the body. That might mean it takes a little bit more patience and a little bit more working with some of the pain. And what does help with regard to that is, if possible, that the backside is off the flat floor, of course, a little higher, and that does help the energy and the flow of the blood to run through the legs a little bit more easily. And if you'd remember just to Subhana, who teaches with me, mentioned this in India, of just rolling the hips forward, this uplifts the body, and then we settle in that moment, and in that, one's spine and the back will gain strength and support. We also, of course, do wish as well to give people encouragement here for making some time, preferably at the beginning of the day, for some exercise to help stretch out back and legs. So sometimes in the sitting meditation itself, when you are breathing in and breathing out, some pain may arise. If possible, to use the breathing in, relaxing on the outgoing breath as much as possible, and to stay steady with the breath, and particularly with the exhalation. There may be times in our life when we are experiencing pain, and It's not going to go away just because we move our legs or move our back. That it's there and it's present. And working with pain is an aspect and feature of the meditation. It doesn't have to be an endurance test. So therefore, feels like it's too much pain, do move the legs or move the back, whatever feels appropriate. And then in due course, returning back to the original posture. Rather important, this, to turning back to the original posture. Even though the second period of time of coming back to the original posture may seem to be shorter than it was the first time. So in other words, one starts off, whatever, 15 or 20 minutes sitting still, then there's pain in the body. So then one moves, a little bit of rest, comes back to the pain. Second session in that sitting might be only 10 minutes lasting. By the end of the sitting, one is going in and out of the posture like a yo-yo. But patiently working with it, most people do find that the period of time of being able to sit longer does get easier. Mind and body can have a decent relationship together, but it does require some practice for us. If some of you have any history of, say, back injury, if you have any history of a leg injury, do be extra careful, extra respectful, and work on the lighter side. In other words, don't use a lot of willpower, don't use a lot of intensity. If you know you've got injuries from the past and therefore need to be more respectful. Sometimes people with back injury will use the wall as or back pains, severe back pains, as to give some support. But if you don't have any of that, then please no leaning into the wall and developing a relationship with it. So it may take a little patience, as I say, to keep the posture steady. Secondly, in terms of the restlessness which comes, not easy to deal with in life, restlessness. Obviously, it's at the other end of the spectrum from calmness. And so sometimes we are sitting and then rather quickly, and we can't work out why, maybe a lot of restlessness begins to come. Some of that restlessness may be due to contrast. In other words, you perhaps look back over the last few days of your life, or sometimes more precisely the last few years of your life, and one has been busy. This word busyness is like an albatross on our back. Busy, 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 busy. Doing, doing, doing. Here, there, this, that, and the other. And then there's no opportunity for genuine, real rest of the being. And then what in English we end up working whatever it, hour upon hour upon hour, and then going home and just enough energy left to turn the television on, and becoming what in English we call a couch potato. And there are a lot of couch potatoes around, and there's no energy left even to get up and to stretch out a few centimeters to switch the remote off. So again, one may arrive here on retreat hoping for some calm and insight, and one finds oneself very, very restless because one is going from doing to non-doing, from running after to being with. And that can be quite a contrast for the whole mind-body life. So therefore, with that, again, quality of patience is required. Plenty of relaxation on the outgoing breath, and just noticing and just being clear, this is restlessness. I'm feeling restless, I'm feeling agitated, I'm feeling unsettled, and to be with it. If the identification with the restlessness grows, the probability is it will produce doubt. That's nearly always a sign that the restlessness has got a grip over one. And the most common form of doubt would be, in this case, doubt in oneself. Or doubt in the teachers, why not? Or doubt in the environment, or doubt in the method, or doubt in the practices, or doubt in the day, or doubt in the timetable, or a doubt in existence, or go anywhere. So when we're feeling restless and agitated, the doubt comes in. You've probably had this experience in a relationship, difficulty in a relationship. Some unsettledness comes in, one feels restless about it, one feels agitated, and then the doubt comes in, and then the doubt says, oh, it was always a terrible relationship. And therefore, the doubt is in the present, and the doubt is in the past as well. It would be very unusual for somebody to start a relationship because it would be terrible from day to day. But people do think that way in the middle of the doubt. So it takes a little awareness, a little clarity with us to see there's restlessness and to see it's got some intensity to it, and then the doubt goes along with the restlessness. So here in our meditations, in our practice, working with the body, but while working with the body, being clear with the mind, because restlessness and doubt as hindrances, as difficulties, are common features of life, and they make life hellish for people, living besieged with self-doubt and living in an agitated and restless way. So part of our practice from day one really is working with this as well and as clearly and as sensitively as possible. The other difficulty or hindrance which arises both in mind and body is tiredness. And sometimes with the tiredness and the waves of tiredness that come, it can be very, very strong. Some of you this morning will have needed extra rest and took it. And so probably perhaps 10 or 15 people missed the first couple of sittings. And if you didn't hear any bells, never mind. Just be grateful. And you had some extra rest this morning until the breakfast time. And sometimes that really is important as well. One has to be watchful in one's life with regard to tiredness. And having the privilege, if I may say, of travelling quite a lot around this world, 3 or 4 continents a year, etc., etc., and what I hear with regard to forms of tiredness just does concern me a great deal. What I mean by that is sometimes in the mental life, through work and study mostly, there's a tremendous amount of mental work going on, and that whole conceptual world of learning, of information technology, of putting one's mind to particular tasks. Sometimes that's producing strong forms of mental tiredness. But mental life also depends, to sustain it, on emotional life, which is underneath it. And then if there's problems in the emotional life, in relationship to oneself, how one feels about oneself, or in relationship to others, that mental tiredness and emotional tiredness can get stronger and stronger. The combination of those two will produce stress, and exhaustion, tiredness and stress working together will then start to go into the cells, will actually enter into the cellular life. And when it enters into the cellular life, there's a tiredness that starts throughout the whole being. And I hear this, if I may say, regularly, distressingly regularly, far too regularly. And in that tiredness which sets in through mind, through emotional life and physical life, just going on a holiday, or just staying in bed all weekend or whatever, will not regenerate and renew the cellular life, the emotional life, and the mental life. And contemporary medicine, Western medicine, is simply ill-equipped to be able to deal with these total situations of people telling me and knowing for themselves they feel more and more tired and low energy, and it's not coming back in. And the meditation practices with regard to this are very, very important, and sometimes it's not just that, and you may have to look into your own life if you are experiencing this, whether or not you quickly and seriously do need to make important changes in your life. To imagine that one is a one of those alarms going off, you know, that to make those, to carry around ideas in one's mind that one can live as one is living and carry on doing it, and with the intensity that can go with home, work and study, and then think that a little bit of meditation daily will look after everything, is living in the land of the cuckoo. And so sometimes we have to look at outer changes if we see in ourselves more and more levels of tiredness taking place. All of that is part of what we mean here by insight. All of that is part of what we mean here by really checking in with ourselves. How's the sense of being here? How's the awareness? How's the level of energy? Of course, on the first day, the whole day may seem one long yawn from 5 in the morning till 10 at night. That one has one's mouth more open here than on a talking day because one is yawning so much. Well, that's not unusual. It may be like that on the second day. Okay, we can live with it. If there's still a lot of tiredness and it's running into the third day or more, most people have to have a real good reflection on why one is so tired, mentally or emotionally and possibly cellularly, physically as well. So I say, first day often lots of tiredness, and I do, as I said in the previous retreat as well, that sometimes the nap, the sleep is important, and one can have a very good nap here in the meditation hall. I've had many good naps in meditation halls, and please feel free to join me. But however, in the tiredness which comes, if you are advertising the fact, I know we live in a world of advertising, but and you start snoring there, which makes even the air conditioning seem quiet, then the person who is sitting near that person, just give her or him a slight touch to bring him or her back to the land of the living. Compassionately, of course, rather than pushing them over. So sometimes there is some tiredness which arises. There, sleepiness comes. It can be helpful and it can be useful just to, if possible, to keep the eyelids up. You know, it's only a centimeter and it sometimes seems far too far. But that can help. Another, sometimes people put their hands on the top of their head and just sit and stretch the body up. And that might release a little bit more cells out of the body. In the monastery, the Ajahn Damodaro in southern Thailand, where I spent 3 or 4 years in Vipassana practice, that there the instruction was this moving of the hand up and down through the air. I know it looks a little bizarre, but actually life is bizarre, so there's a certain harmony. So moving up and down the hand, that can help. So, and the Ajahn used to actually insist on doing this, because when the monks were falling asleep, the hand would be like this. and then he'd clap or whatever. So it's just small moment-to-moment contributions in practical ways towards alertness, awareness, and being present with the meditations. It isn't easy. There is pain to deal with. There are some of the tirednesses which come. There are areas of restlessness. But never forget, the teachings remind us again and again, the close companion of tiredness is carelessness. That's why we look at our tiredness. The close companion is carelessness. Most obvious Western example is driving the car, making mistakes on the computer or whatever, saying the wrong word to somebody or whatever it might be. When we are tired, quite often we are quite emotionally vulnerable. Somebody says something to us and we're feeling very tired, they just say the wrong word, and suddenly we flare up. We get really angry. We didn't even know we had that energy until the person said something. So in tiredness there's an emotional vulnerability there. We are interested in waves of tiredness that come as well. So just to recap for a moment or two here, there's the mindfulness of breathing, care and attention with the posture, extra care with the exhalation, being steady and firm if there are moments before the next in-breath comes in, feeling the breath in the body, no clinging to the old methods, techniques or whatever, so that we follow here what's taking place, and of course no clinging to this when one goes somewhere else. In the meditations, so that interest with regard to the pain, as I referred to, with regard to restlessness, lots of relaxation on the outgoing breath, and the working with the tiredness. When it's feeling quite tired, of course, fine, no problem, take a nap. When the energy comes back in the sitting meditation, firm resolution, and to use that energy as much as possible throughout the duration of the sitting. So this is very much the meditations, the practices, and the features for today. So let's have 15 minutes of meditation together. On the retreat, we regard every activity as equally important, every moment of the day equally significant, and there isn't any hierarchy in that each moment contributes to every other moment, and our giving care and attention to each moment pays respect to life, pays respect to ourselves, and therefore all moments of the day have that same quality of significance there. And that applies with the meditations, it applies with the postures, and in the walking meditations there are a number of them through the day. And initially you may feel it necessary for you to be walking up and down at a normal speed of walking, but with a general view towards slowing down the walking speed and making the walking very meditative. The primary method which is used with the walking is the simple and obvious factor that we are in touch and connected with each foot as it touches the ground. The simple thing that confirms, demonstrates that we are walking. So each step counts, whether we're using footwear or barefooted. So as the foot touches the ground, we feel the vibration, the sensation, the contact of the feet with the earth. Then the other foot comes up, it moves through the air, it touches the ground, And once again, we're with that contact. So it is genuinely a step-by-step activity. This contributes to slowing down mind and body, and it also contributes to the harmony of body and mind. In the walking meditation, the area that we need may be just 5 or 10 meters to walk up and down. The walking meditation is engaged in individually and can be anywhere in the lovely grounds here. We keep the meditation hall exclusively for sitting meditation and for standing meditation. In the walking meditation, making each step count and walking 5 or 10 meters, and when we turn the body, being aware of the turn of the body, walking up and down again. Part of the feature and practice is the obvious of being right here and now with what is. We're not interested in goals or destinations, not interested in where we're coming from, but in the process of walking on this earth, in the process of being alive, in the process of living from one moment to the next. So I want to encourage everyone as much as possible to make full use of the walking periods, and with the walking period, great deal of depth and subtlety truly can be discovered, and a great deal of insights and understanding truly can flower, as much in the walking meditations as in the sitting and the standing meditations. All of this, though, we can see and explore through our own experience. Sometimes it's not easy with the walking, simply because for some there's no pain in the walking, of course, and how easily then the mind can wander and drift away. So it takes a little resolution, a little firmness, sometimes a few reminders. Let us walk on this earth as though it was the last day of walking on this earth. If it was the last day, I'm sure the energy and attention would be a lot stronger. So let's make each step, each walking period as valid and as connected as we can. Some people like to go from, as you sit in the same spot here in the sitting hall, to go to the same, use the same locality for the walking meditation. And some people find that helpful and useful through the day. Again, with the fullness of the time table, remember for those of you who are first time on a retreat, no need to put, and for others as well in fact, no need to put a lot of stress and pressure on yourself or whatever. I would say as a basic is certainly one sitting between wake up and breakfast, one between breakfast and lunch, one between lunch and tea, and one between tea and sleep, is a minimal basic four sits a day. Do come, of course, to the instruction period, which takes place at this time every day, and to the inquiry, evening talk, guided meditations. That also is very helpful and supportive. If you are having a hard time, and there are many 101 good reasons for people having a hard time with heart, mind and body on a retreat, do come and find one of the three of us, and we'll endeavour to give as much support as we can, of course. So we wish to use these the postures as fully as possible. With the standing meditation, that can be done in here, it can be done elsewhere, under the tree or in the room behind, or wherever is appropriate. Rather similarly with the walking meditation, the standing posture is standing straight and upright. The eyes can be closed or open. Bear attention to the bare actuality of the 2 feet touching the ground. Just standing on this earth, nowhere to go, nothing to do, being present and truly being a conscious human being, which is the key to an enlightened and liberated life. That truly we are conscious. Again, as we're sitting and as we're walking, sometimes it can be uncomfortable and painful. If so, bend the back a little bit, stretch the legs a couple of times or whatever it might be, take two or three steps, but returning to the standing original standing posture, both hands, as with the walking, that kind of can be on the abdomen, and that kind of meditative, calm, respectful way to the moment of existence. And generally speaking, we can develop our standing meditation from a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, if I may say. In the monk's time, I and one elderly monk, Paul Longbut, his name, and myself, we did every day. I was a young guy, I was in my mid-20s, he was turned 70. We did a three-hour standing meditation under the tree in the grounds of the monastery. And it was just a little bit of practice, a little bit of time and effort, and one able to stand quite still, quite upright, be really present to the moment of life. Again, great depth and great value. All is practice here, all is practice. So in the practice meditation, do make use of the standing meditation. Finally, the fourth posture that the Buddha spoke about, sitting, walking, standing and reclining. Often he spoke of them in the same breath. The reclining posture is keeping the posture very, very straight, very, very still, and particularly important for energy flow, for harmony and well-being, but especially important for people, and rather a lot of people in this world, who have great difficulty at night in getting to sleep. And the difficulty of that can show itself in many factors of mind and body. And even if we know sometimes what the factors are, it may not make any difference there. So what we can do is, when we lie down, to whether we lie on the back or whether we lie, what the Buddhist world calls the lion posture, that means lying on the side, to relax the whole body so it's immaculately, perfectly still. Stillness is a real key here, because sometimes the channel from the waking state to the deep sleep state keeps getting disturbed. And it's disturbed by movement, it's disturbed by thought, it's disturbed by desire to sleep, it's disturbed by many patterns. So that channel has to come clear and fluid. It isn't easy, I know. But if we keep very, very still and very, very steady and relax and we don't fight, even if it still takes some time to sleep, at least there is maximum relaxation for body and mind. Just to be in the stillness and silence of things. And for some people, report, and of course extremely grateful for the fact that years of struggle with sleep have gone away, and there's that ease in transition from the waking state to the sleep state, because the channel has got cleared for it. Like everything else, it's a quiet practice, and obviously one which for some of you will be important every night there. So, again with the horizontal posture, not to be used, please, in here. Unless you have painful injuries, and sometimes with people who are recovering and therefore need to use a horizontal for that, that's fine, no problem. But otherwise, then to use your rooms, and two or three people I noticed taking the mattress and sleeping out on the lawn at night, and apparently during the night somebody got a free shower as well from the water sprinkler. So if you're into that as a preference to the bell ringing, no problem. Just like sleep by the water sprinklers. So again, with the day and the fullness of the day, sitting, walking, standing and reclining all matter, because that's where our life is. We'll see most of you today in the small groups. Check again for the times. Those groups, Catherine left me a note here that we haven't seen today, we'll of course be seeing tomorrow morning. And there is a rotation through the days of the retreat together with regard to the small groups.